The second thing is the idea of a rehearsal swing instead of a practice swing. Posture and setup. And like, just look at yourself when you set up. Like, do you look slouched over? Do you look athletic? Like you could hit the ball 350 yards in that setup. Like, how do you look swing? Even pros hate looking at their golf swing because everyone just sees everything wrong with it.
There is podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
And now, the Member Guest Podcast!
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
Never thought we'd make it here.
Here we are. It's good to be here. It's good to be here.
All the way up from Rochester, Minnesota.
Got to play Wind Song this morning. It was fantastic. Yeah. What a great day.
Okay, now that you've had time to reflect.
Yeah.
We had lunch.
Yep.
You got to drive here.
Yep.
I think I asked you your favorite hole, but just generally Wind Song. You've played a bunch of courses, I assume.
Yeah.
What do you think? What do you like? What could be better? Where's it like? Where's it stand? You know, just give me your I want raw feedback on the
questions.
Farm.
I like the, so first of all, vibe is good because you have to drive to get there. So it's like out a little bit, right? No houses around. That's
awesome.
That's a plus on the vibes. Clubhouse and facilities are a vibe. That's good. So initially everything's A+.
Yeah. Right?
And it looks really cool. It looks like it's a great piece of property flowing through. The holes that I remember the most are like, I mentioned it at lunch, but like, 14, 15, I love any hole that you can see out. So those holes really stand out. I love a bit of uniqueness. So the par three with what do you even call those things? The grain tower?
Oh, the silo. Yeah. I guess you would call it the silo. So hole four. Yeah. You did really like hole four.
Unique little weird stuff. I hit a good shot on that hole too. So,
Well, I was playing 210 today with little wind and silo behind and you did hit a good shot.
It's good. It was like generally the things that I don't like about like Minnesota golf courses like this are losing golf balls. I think I mentioned this to you.
Yeah.
And you can do that out there. I thankfully didn't lose a golf ball, which is great.
I don't think you did. The only like one we had to look for was on 8.
Yeah.
And luckily we found it. It was just past the bunker because you hammered it. You hammer the ball.
Thank you.
For anybody that might question if Cordy hits the ball a long ways, he does.
Does he swing hard out on the golf course? Yes.
Yeah. He does. You didn't lose a golf ball. And that's, I mean, it can be really easy to do right now because of how long our fescue is.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say that is like, it doesn't even have to do with the golf and the course and the holes. It's just like, if you hit it in the fescue, like there's a chance you're just not going to find it, where a lot of fescue is, you know, half stroke penalty. Ours can potentially be full stroke or two strokes.
No, we had it on a great day. It was a little bit of wind, so it was tough. And it's just great. Grass is great. Really good conditions.
Yeah.
18, the 18th hole kind of had my brain in a little.
And we talked about it too as we went through it, because I think I explained it really well. Is a lot of people they love it, and some people just hate it. You know, you can fall into two different categories. And like I told you, depending on the day and depending on like the wind that you get, can be the love hate, because you could probably see where if it's downwind, I mean, a lot of those guys in the Gopher can just pound driver, and like it's a gettable par five. And today we had it pretty, I mean, into the wind. There was no chance we were hitting driver. It was that windy, and it's just a three shot forced kind of layup, and you know, walk out with par and
take your par and
go and feel all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was super fun. I'm glad I got to play it. It has some similarities to my home course, cause it shares a layman was designing where I play at Summerbee. So felt at home ish, but the terrain is cool out there, and just some of it has a little bit, everything's just ramped up more out there. That's great.
Yeah. And then like, I mean, we just played the blue today because of the wind, but you take a step back to the blacks, or there's even some boxes behind those. I think you would probably enjoy it more too, when you're just like, there were a couple holes that you didn't hit driver just because it's a smart thing to do. dude, you get back to those 7,200, 7,300 yard like boxes and you're just hitting driver everywhere, it becomes a big boy golf course. So I would love to, when Max was here, I asked him, what do you think pros would shoot over 4 days? You know, let's say it's a little faster and firmer and greens are rolling, you know, 12, 13. Yeah. I think that's what they typically roll on the PGA Tour. What do you think his answer was over 4 days? What do you think the winner was to par?
18.
That actually is dead on the nuts, what he said. Nice. Yeah, he said minus 18.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting perspective from him because, you know, I asked about distance and he said distance doesn't really matter for them. I think his reference was the longest PGA Tour course they had played. Everybody was under par because they're so good, they're so long, and really the only way to make, you know, golf courses harder for guys at their level is smaller greens, which we have really large greens.
Yeah.
At Windsong, and then the fastness and the firmness of the golf course, which just makes it harder to control shots and spin and all that stuff. So interesting perspective from a guy that sees those courses every week.
The green thing is probably a huge factor, right? Like they just can't play a golf course with big greens because it's just...
Yeah, and they're all going to two putt. Like they putt so good. Right. So you got to make them really small and really challenging and... Yep. Then they can start to show his teeth.
So I was out at Around a Mink for the PGA this year, and it was a controversial course. Some people hated it, didn't love it. Walking around it is brilliant, super interesting.
Why didn't people like it? I've heard Around a Mink's amazing.
Yeah, it was really cool. The greens are small, very sloped, super hard. And I thought it was fascinating to watch them struggle around there a little bit. What was the winning score at there?
At the PGA? Yeah. It was Aaron Rye.
Boy.
8?
Yeah. Yeah. So they didn't go nuts.
My memory is.
I just thought that was brilliant, watching them kind of figure that out around there. But yeah, Around a Mink, very cool to walk around. Would recommend.
9 under. Oh, it's close. Okay. Yeah, good, but he shot 5 under on Sunday.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he definitely went out and won it too.
Yep.
We're 7 minutes in, haven't even introduced Cordy to the program. If anybody, and most of our listeners are from Minnesota, but just in the golf world, they've probably seen your YouTube channel, probably seen the combos you've had with Minnesota's own Luke Benoit or Justin Kraft or pretty much everywhere. I see you talking with Scott Fawcett, a lot of people I've talked to as well.
Yeah.
Cordy Walker, aka Cordy Golfwell, is that? Yeah.
Got the hat on for the branding.
I want to talk a little bit about your story, man. Like I envy you a little bit in the sense that you were one of the first people I followed. And it was just about, you know, playing better golf. Like I always loved that motto. And I think you and I are very similar in the way that, like, you know, we approach the game. We're definitely similar in the way that, like, we play the game. And you've just done a lot of things that, you know, I look at and I go, yeah, like this guy and I get it. So when did this all start? A little background would be awesome. And then, you know, you just kind of transitioned to golf well in the last like year or two. So how'd this all begin?
Strangest origin story ever. Coming out of college, I did a software startup around scheduling and student management for golf instructors. So I just started calling people just like, hey, like what, you interested in this? Like, what would you want in it? Got to know a bunch of awesome golf instructors through that. I started a podcast about the business of golf instruction called Golf in the Life Of, and just talked to golf instructors. I like found a bunch of great people, made some great friends along the way. I ran out of money. The software startup, didn't go anywhere after about 18 months.
That's what you're supposed to do at a software startup though, by the way, you're supposed to run out of money.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
It was anyways, we kept going thankfully from that. Then 2015 started Golf Science Lab because I found there's awesome research in golf, like real academics at universities doing interesting studies around golf. I was like, I didn't know about this. Nobody's ever talked about this. So I went around and did podcast seasons around motor learning, the brain, biomechanics, technology, and got to know some, again, awesome people. Went to the World Scientific Congress of Golf in 2016 in St. Andrews. Was just like, got really involved in that, and continued being super involved in golf instruction. And then took a break around COVID because didn't travel, obviously. And so just kind of stopped filming stuff and then came back and was like, this is awesome. We're just going to go all in. We're going to try to make the best like long form videos we can around how do we get better. And so I just try to go around, find the most interesting people with the most interesting ideas, and try to make it as interesting and entertaining as possible.
And would you consider your background being in media as well?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a normal person. I grew up playing junior golf. And so like, I've always been a golfer, and all these things are, I wish I knew this when I was a junior golfer. Yeah. Like, why did nobody tell me this growing up? So that's a little bit of the drive is like, I want to share everything that I've learned and I wish that I knew along the way. And so that's just kind of the drive. Like, I'm going to go out and we're going to make this and I'm going to share this with these people.
Well, and strictly from like the, I'll call it like the business or content perspective, it's funny that like you picked up right after COVID too, because that's when things really start, like, you started seeing golf go like a little bit, and then maybe it was at 2023. It was just like all of a sudden, like a hockey stick in terms of like golf popularity.
Yeah.
How do you run just like, dude, how do you do all the content? Like, how many people do you have? Like, are there full-time people that you do with this? Cause I've watched the videos of like what Bob does sports and Foreplay. They're obviously on a different type of level, but you watch those videos and they got like four carts for every group and literally full on camera crews. And I think the way that you do your stuff too is really like, do a really good job. Yeah. So like, what does the team look like when you're doing full-time content?
Yeah. It's interesting. It's easier and harder than you think, probably all at the same time. Like, lucky for us, we shoot way less than you probably think. Cause we'll do a trip and we'll try to get maybe two or three different shoots done over a trip. And so we bulk stuff. Like, there's not that many shoot days in a year that we do. So on that, so I run a production company. So when we're pulling people out for this, we'll bring a crew of two to three with on every shoot.
Okay.
And then, we have, there's just constantly editing stuff. So I have one guy, Sean, he's just editing all the time, just golf videos.
He's full-time golf video editor.
Yeah, just editing. It's easier than you think because we shoot less than you think, but it's harder than you think because we edit so long. Everything takes so long to get
to
it,
look
like,
good,
dialed.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's probably more than ever because we're in this project of I went and played speed golf and learned speed golf this year.
Yeah, which we'll talk about because that's awesome, by the way.
So we're making this video and we're like, I don't know, 3 weeks into the process at this point of editing these things. And it's just like, I don't know if we're ever going to finish these. That's where we're at right now. I'm sure we will shortly, but that's the hard part.
Well, I know we're going to talk speed golf stuff. I do want to talk, you know, what have been some of the coolest realizations or learning since you started about getting better at the game from somebody that, you know, played, because you played in high school, right? Yeah. So you grew up playing golf. We were talking about this today, like, I'm a little different. I didn't grow up around the game. And so I'm similar to you, like, there's so many things I wish I learned when I first started out that if I could go back and do it again, would have gotten me a little bit better, a lot quicker. But you grew up around the game and there's still a lot of stuff that you learned. What are the coolest things that you've seen, not only, you know, the sports evolved the last couple of years, but just stuff that you went like, wow, how is this out there? And I just never heard about it.
The funnest thing to watch has been a paradigm shift and from golf instruction to golf coaching that I've watched since I started. Like, the word coach was never used. And so like, growing up, golf instruction was primarily about like a position in your backswing, a specific technique change that we're making. And now it's more about golf coaches who are, helping you play better golf with strategy on the course. Like, what are you doing? What are you working on and practicing? And like, really looking at this more as an athletic endeavor that is more than just the swing technique to get you better. And so they're taking all of these things and putting it together and helping build game plans to get better. And this was like, this has been I've watched this kind of grow and grow and grow. And it's really cool to see this emphasis on top coaches to get people on the golf course and get them shooting lower scores rather than just like working on golf swings.
Yeah. Playing golf, not playing golf swing is something I hear a lot because people get so enamored in the golf swing, and I get there too. Sometimes I'm just like playing golf swing. It's like, man, I wonder how this would look on camera. And like, I just kind of forget to actually play the game of golf with everything else. And then usually when I get back to playing golf, I start playing a little bit better.
Yeah.
But the hardest part is like separating those two things and actually like when you're playing, not thinking about all the other stuff. Like I've heard Benoit say this, and I know you talk to him a lot, but I've heard a lot of coaches say this, which is you have to turn off all the stuff that you practice doing. Just like when you play, you just go play and not think about that. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea how to do that yet. Like yeah. I haven't figured that out. I mean, I'll get a couple holes in and be like, oh, I lost this feel, or I have to have a feel. And I haven't gotten to the point that I just can't think about it. We which sucks.
Get you playing speed golf then.
That's
my new cure all for every issue.
Because you just don't think. No. Yeah. How did you get into this? I mean, is Marooch the most popular speed golf guy?
Yeah. He's
got to be number one.
The most well-known.
Right.
For sure. I mean, honestly, speed golf is kind of the solution for a lot of issues. Like you can prove to yourself that I can hit good shots without thinking about it, kind of rushing through things without going through a full pre-shot routine. I can make putts without reading the green. You know, like there's all these things you'll kind of prove to yourself and you go like, wait a minute, like this shouldn't work. But you do. Like now do things get a lot difficult? Yes. Like hitting half shots is very hard with a super high heart rate. Like trying to flight a nine iron, not easy to do.
What's your average heart rate during your? You said it was like
172 was for like the
172 is your hour. Average heart rate
for an hour.
For an hour playing golf, shooting 77.
Yeah. So that was 77, 56 minutes. So the story is, I have a goal. I like setting goals because it makes me do things. And the goal that I have is to win a national open. So probably not going to win the US Open. Probably not going to win the Canadian Open or any open that we all know. So I'm going to have to find some outside the box national opens.
Yeah.
And I posted that on Instagram and Scott Dolly messaged and said, hey, how about the US Speed Golf Open? And I was like, I hate running. And I started talking to my wife. I was like, this guy messaged us, like, what do you think about this? She's like, oh yeah. She was getting into running. She's like, you should do it. Like, this would be great. Like, you should totally do it. And I kind of sat on it for a while and I was like, all right, we're going to do this. So I went on my first run on May 1st, had never run before. And then the tournament was July 25th. So did a bunch of running. I went to Kentucky. I did 14 runs between May 1st. And when I went to Kentucky, I learned from two guys that had won the US Speed Golf Open. And then had 1 month in between then and the actual thing went out there. And I hit my goal was to shoot 75 and under an hour. And I did it the first day. It was, it was insane. It was so much fun.
Did you track your, I know it's so hard probably to do anything while you're just like hitting running. And for anybody listening, we talked about this. So your score is your time that you run plus your score. So like you can't just go hit and finish in, you know, 42 minutes and win at 42 minutes.
Yep.
The score obviously matters as well.
Yes.
But did you track any of your stats?
I didn't. I should.
It'd be really, I would love to see that because it'd be really interesting to see what like is actually potentially better and then where like you struggle. Cause that would probably just tell you right away you're glaring where you need to get better. I would assume.
It was just like bunt to 3-iron, hit on the green 2-putt. Bunt to 3-iron, hit it on the green, 2-putt. It would go wrong if I had a weird number into the, and it, I was carrying a 3-iron, a 9-iron, a sand wedge. So like if I had a weird number, like 140 yards, like as a bad number.
Yeah.
So like that's when I'd miss a green, have to get up and down, try to get up and down, typically wouldn't. And then you'd get a bogey out of that. But like the second round I made like 3 or 4 birdies, made a bunch of putts.
Did the birdies come on par fives or just hitting it close?
Just hitting it decently close and then making a decent putt. It was weird, but like, it really makes you think like the lessons learned are core strategy. Like you have to keep the ball, you have to see the ball and you want to keep it short of the green. Cause you don't want to run past the green. You have to come back and waste a bunch of time and all this stuff. So it's constantly just like, can I see the ball? I want to keep it in play and see it so I can go hit it again. And then you just like, you're obviously not going to hit a driver because that brings all kinds of stuff into play.
Way too far.
Yeah. So it was the lesson learned are like core strategy. Like you can make this super easy. And then like proving yourself, I can hit good golf shots if my heart rate's high and I'm under pressure. Like I can still do it. I can hit good putts. And like maybe this whole thing about rushing and thinking it through, like probably doesn't matter as much as you think.
Like, be an athlete.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
And what did you say the best in the world. Yeah. Like, well, what are they playing?
Yeah. So the guy that won, James Hardy, like, really interesting, but he shot, 73 in 41 minutes is mind blowing.
41 minutes. Just and that's, it's what, give or take 5 miles.
Yeah. It was like 4.8. So, my average is like 11 is what I was running, 11 minute miles.
Yeah.
When I'm running, I was running at about like an 8:20 minute mile pace.
Okay. But
then you stop all the time, right?
Yeah.
You
yeah.
stopped, hit the yep. ball. On. So, yeah, it was unbelievable. It was so fun.
And you're going to New Zealand to do the championships?
There's a good chance that I'm going to go to the World Cup. And,
it's not confirmed yet.
I have to confirm that mentally and emotionally.
fair enough. Yeah.
I'm going to go do that. But like, it seems super fun. I really appreciate the invite. And so, yeah, it's one of those things that I've done, which has just made golf so much more interesting again, mm-hmm. of just like this whole new thing of challenging the stereotypes and challenging what you think is how you have to do or what you think is normal. And like realizing there might be like what actually matters. That's really what's kind of thrown me into a tailspin of like, what matters when I go play golf now? Cause I know it's not like going through a full pre-shot routine. I know it's not getting the perfect yardage and like having the perfect target.
When you say what matters, are you talking about the things that matter to shoot better scores or like the things that matter to me for like what I'm trying to achieve when I golf, like having fun or shooting a score? Like,
I think like what matters to shoot the best score that you can.
Got it.
Cause I like was now the course is shorter, right? Granted, that's the point is not to have a tipped out 7,200 yard course, but, like what actually matters for me to play my best golf. And that's kind of what has made this kind of made me start to think about that more. I need to dive into it a bit more and really,
that's why I'd love to see the strokes gained. Cause I'd be really, really interested. So we were talking decade a little bit and I've always noticed how, you know, like I think both of us, we see that our approach mm-hmm. is lacking compared to like how good, you know, I think most decades stuff's off PGA Tour average, which I would rarely expect my approach to be PGA Tour average with how good those guys hit it. But when I do it and I shoot, you know, like 3 over, like I did today, and I see my approach is like -3, I go, well, I didn't actually think that I hit my irons all that bad. Like I had one or two bad shots, but like nothing crazy. Like I actually thought I didn't chip it good today. And then I look at my chips and I actually had, you know, two that went really close that led to a birdie or a really good par. And those like even out.
Yeah.
And I go, wow, maybe I do just need to spend my time on approach. And it'd be funny. Like when you look at the strokes gain data, like what actually matters, it's like, you just need to hit your irons really good and you're going to be able to shoot really good scores.
Right.
Or maybe it's something else. I have no idea.
Yeah. Okay. I'll go put the data in and figure that out. That's a good question.
Could be that.
Yeah.
Could be something else. We also went through the stack system today with the wedges.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat. What else? So I watched most of your content video. Yeah. I mean, there's a million things, right? Yeah. Like, and this is probably, I don't want to say a problem with golf, cause I wouldn't call it a problem. I'd help maybe call it a nice problem to have.
Yeah.
Is that there's so much stuff out there, right?
Yeah.
So much information. You know, I have my opinions that I tell people on, like, here's what I did and here's like the noise I blocked out, the things I really focused on. What do you focus on? Like, cause at some point you have to just not do everything. Otherwise you don't have a sense of direction. You're trying to bunch of stuff and that just leads to probably not playing well.
Yep.
What are the things you focus on other than distance? Cause you hammer the ball.
Yeah. Another rabbit trail. Let me summarize. I'll try to condense all the most interesting things that I tell people most often. So I'm going to start in like what I'm focused on right now is I think we all underestimate the importance of like our body when playing golf. So the warm up, resistance bands are like part of my lifestyle now if I'm golfing.
And how old are you? Just for context. Yeah, about my age.
So, like, I don't know if you saw before, but I had my stupid band out.
Dude, I did the same thing in the locker room. I looked at it's completely normal to me. I just go, everybody has resistance bands now. It's key.
Like,
yeah,
you got to do it. Like, I like swinging hard. It's what I enjoy doing. I like trying to do that. And, like, I can't do it if I don't warm up with the resistance band. So, doing that, we did this great video with Jackson Court. Kind of showing some golf swing specific moves. So, like, doing, like, resistance band punches, like, it's not enough people watch that video because it's absolutely brilliant. I use it constantly. So I think getting the body ready, golf specific movements. We did this video with Mark Blackburn, kind of walking through the warm up that tour pros are doing. And a lot of that is getting the body ready, with a portion of that being swing specific moves, like for you, that you need to work on. A part of that is just like getting your body used to hitting the golf ball, feeling mm-hmm. contact in the ground. And then a part of it is getting your mind ready to play. So like, I didn't do it today, but if it was a tournament, it's like, okay, I'm spending the last 10 minutes of my warm up and I am playing some holes, like thinking about it to try to get the brain ready and warmed up. And it's all these little things of like getting, so body warmed up, contact and swing warmed up, and then mind warmed up. Like all of those things kind of need to happen if you want to be in your best performance state. Now, a lot of you are probably like, this is dumb. I'm never going to use that because I just like to walk up and go play golf. That's fine. That's great. But like, if you really want to, like the things that I think are most interesting, a lot of it is there, like in the preparation.
Yeah. Before you even actually play.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So
that's a huge thing.
What about the stuff when you play? Like what's made the biggest impact on performance?
Yeah.
Playing wise.
I love having really high expectations as someone who likes to set outrageous goals and like go like do stuff like that. Playing golf can sometimes be the worst. So understanding like a normal distribution curve of every golfer on the planet shoots between like probably about 16, maybe 12 and 20 strokes is the difference. So my low for this year is probably going to be 70 and my high is probably going to be like 84. I typically shoot between 75 to 78.
Yeah.
And just having that expectation beforehand and knowing that, you know what, I'm going to shoot 70 to 73 like a few times. It's going to be great. We're going to have a great time we do that. But it's not every time. Now, the goal obviously is I want to shift my whole average down. Mm-hmm. That's what we're all trying to do when we do this. So yeah,
bring your scoring average down by a point or two.
Totally. But in the big picture, majority of the time I'm going to shoot like 75 to 78 and I'm going to be a little bit annoyed by it, but like you got to work on bringing this whole average down. Like, don't get pissed. Like, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Cause we all want to shoot the 72 every time we go play.
Yeah, I think I literally, before we played, talked about what I was probably going to shoot. And I think I probably shot that pretty close to the way that I described I would shoot it.
Yeah. Yep.
Two doubles, two bogeys, three birdies.
Yeah.
74. Just like, come on.
Because when we have that really high expectations, the tension level goes up. And when tension level goes up, we start to perform worse. So it's all about keeping, how can we lower tension and not have tension be high? And things as well, like, this is from Will Robbins, but like start in first gear. So what does that mean for you? So for me, like today, it wasn't hitting driver off the first tee right away and like, let's hope we hit a good one.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, we can just kind of chill out and let's just get it in play and
like go ease into it.
Ease into it. Like start in first gear. Cause too many people, like I am a classic example. I always start terribly. I even did today, managed to do it. But like, how do we, you know, start in first gear and ease our way into the round? Cause too many rounds start and are lost in the first few holes.
Yeah. And it's hard to stay in it mentally. Yeah. You get checked out. It's you're always going back on the first or second hole where you made a bad score. You're like, man, if I just found a way to make par there, I'd be one under, and instead I'm two over. Yep. And yeah, then it gets hard to kind of stay through it.
Yeah.
Have you talked to a lot of mental, folks in golf?
Yeah. Yeah.
What are the similarities there? Cause I feel like I've had some mental conversations. There's the mental around strategy. There's a mental around like your expectations. And there's like the actual mental of like, you know, bringing your heart rate down. And like, where are you just in like that state of mind? And like, have you found any similarities and talked to people about like what the pros are doing? Yeah. Cause again, there's so much information out there. It's kind of hard to, I'd be interested from your perspective, cause you've had a lot of these similar conversations about what you found.
Yeah. We'll start big picture and then we'll go like nitty gritty. So big picture, Dr. Greg Carton, great guy, more of a mindfulness approach towards this. And so something to realize is that like golf pros have all the same thoughts that we do. So like, we might think like, gosh, if I just didn't, like, if I could just like forget that there's OB over there and I just would knew that, you know, like I was going to hit it perfect every time down the middle. Like, no, like the tour pros also are like, I better not hit this OB. Like yeah. they're also having those thoughts as well. So it's not like there's some superpower where you, that thought of like, I hope I don't shank this one. Like they also have that thought. And it's okay. Like you can think that thought and still hit a good shot.
Yeah.
And so like that is a bit freeing as well. Like there's no mental superpower of like tour pros think perfectly. They still think about all the same stuff. And then from like a nitty gritty of like, what can we go do? Or like, how can you apply something, quickly? I think of, like Lynn and Pia, Vision 54. They have a really simple framework of think box, decision line, and play box.
Yeah, think box, play box. I've heard that, yeah.
So if you do all of your preparation in the think box, then as soon as you cross that decision line, you're into the play box, and it's we're going to let go with complete freedom because everything else is done back there. And so like that's a simple little framework of how to maybe approach that. Another like pre-shot. One more is another pre-shot routine that I love is from Will Robbins again, but the, it calls it 3-3-4.
He calls it 3-3-4?
3-3-4.
3-3-4.
There's these three steps. So, and you can score yourself on them. Like how good did you do it? So the first step is to visualize the shot. Like, what does it actually look like? Like how high did it go? Is it that cloud? Like, is it curving that way? Is it straight? Like, visualize the shot. Yeah. The second thing is the idea of a rehearsal swing instead of a practice swing. And I heard this one from Ralph Bauer as well. We did some putting stuff. And this has been, you might say it's just language, but I think it's more than that. It's like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. Like, let's make that swing. Did that feel like the shot that was going to hit that? Like the swing that's going to hit that shot? Yes or no? Like if it's not, then let's do it again until it does feel like it. With putting, I think this is huge of like having a rehearsal putt of looking at like actually when you make that rehearsal stroke, if that hit the putt, would it go the right distance? Is that the right stroke for it? And putting a bit more of like emphasis on that. And then in this 3-3-4, so you've got visualization, you've got rehearsal, and then 4 is full commitment and then letting go of the shot. So like, I fully believe this is I'm going to hit it, but regardless of the outcome, like I'm fully happy with everything I've done and I'm fully committed to this. And so that little framework, and you can score yourself like out of, because it's 10, 3-3-4, 10, add it all together.
Oh, got it.
So you can score yourself out of 10, like how you did on that. And there's something to practicing that because you can do it for a hole or two, but you're going to forget.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're going to get distracted.
Like, that's what Scott says with decade stuff. It's like, you're going to forget some holes.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's like, you have to train yourself in pre-shot routine because sure. we're all like, it's really easy to have just a shallow, like most of the shots I hit today were like pretty shallow. And it wasn't full intent and commitment and
yep.
deep into that process. So, it's something you constantly have to train.
Well, and it's the battle too of like, sometimes when you're in the flow state and you're not thinking and then you're also playing good. Like mm-hmm. I've had those days too, where I'm just, you know, it's like when Hideki goes like robot mode, you know, it's yeah. like, man, is he actually thinking about anything or is he yeah. just out playing in flow state? It just comes so naturally. And like, you're in that and it's the constant battle in your mind of like, what's too much, what's not enough. Like, you know, everybody wants to find that flow state. And
yep.
I can probably count on, you know, one hand, how many times I found that, but the times I have, it's like the best feeling in the world looking yeah. back on it.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So, but the question is then like, how are we going to manage the rest of the time?
Yeah. You know? The other 99%
exactly.
percent of the time that we go out and
yeah.
play.
Yeah. Cause that's the majority of where we spend our, even pros, right? Like that's the majority of where they spend their time is yeah. not in flow state.
Making your bad good, not your best better.
Yeah.
Is something I always like to say.
Yeah.
You traveled around, a bunch, done a bunch of videos, content, you name it. I shouldn't say who, cause I don't want to say like, who's your favorite, who's been the best, yes. but like, you know, you never want to say that, especially like in the world yeah, that we're like, yeah. dude, everybody's awesome. Yeah. Actually, like I love all the conversations that I have.
Yeah.
But what have been some of the most like fun trips? Like where are the places I had this realization the other day and you asked me this too. It's like, okay, well like, why do you still do it? Mm-hmm. Like, dude, I love it. Like it's opened up so many doors. I've learned so many cool things about something that like wasn't even in my life until, you know, after the age of 18 or 20, whatever it was, like around college. And like, I've gotten to do so many cool things, play so many courses, just do a bunch of stuff because of the podcast. Like, what are the coolest things that you've gotten to do that you never would have thought this would have like brought you to?
Boy, that's a good question. I mean, literally everything that I get to do is nuts. It feels like I'm incredibly grateful for all these opportunities. Like things that stand out to me. I don't know why this comes to mind right away, but like when we were down in Jupiter, what trip was that? Gosh, we were shooting with Claude Harmon, and that was super interesting to learn from him in his home base. But before that, went to gym with Colby Touye, called The Stable, and he works with Justin Thomas and Tommy Fleetwood, and like he is the trainer for them, and he took me through his full like protocol. And like worked with me. I'd gotten to know him in the past on some trips with Tony Ruggiero, but Colby's just awesome. And so to like get someone to work with me on like this part of my speed journey of like, I need to get stronger. Like Colby, how do I do this? And have him like walk through like, okay, this is exactly what you need to do to get stronger so that you can hit it farther. And the same things that he's doing with like Tommy Fleetwood and, you know, all these guys. It's like, that was pretty random. I go to a course and I was in a gym with somebody. But like that was a really cool thing for me. Cause maybe it's out of golf. It's a little bit different.
Yeah.
Cool experience.
It doesn't matter what it is. There's always something.
Yeah. It's like that. That was just fascinating to me. And like how I have so much to gain personally, like from that stuff. Of like, I'm super weak. Gosh, if I could spend more time in the gym and get stronger, that'd be great.
Well, it is. I mean, part of the golf swing doesn't even have to do with like actual strength, but just like how you use your body, and you're plenty fat. I mean, if you want to, you can probably get up to 190 ball speed, if I had to guess.
Yeah. Well,
that's what have you gotten higher?
I'm this last winter I could get to 187, 188.
Okay. Yeah.
So now this winter this coming winter season, I have to get over 190.
Yeah. Cause 190 is like what you're chasing. I mean, I probably saw a couple 185s today if I were to guess,
maybe around 180,
pretty close.
Yeah. On the range beforehand, I would throw a little launch monitor down. It was like 120, 175.
175.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So might have got going a little bit.
It definitely gets up there. It's like, there's a dude I follow on Instagram and how he talks about like, I swing it slower than you, but hit it harder and faster than you. Cause I use my body. He's like I don't know what his handle is. I wish I could remember, but something about like the fast swing coach, and he'll literally stand there and like not even move his lower body and just like do this.
Yeah.
And it's like 180. I'm like, excuse me. It's just like all about, you know, timing and how he just like leverages everything. And then when he actually swings, it's just like this smooth 190 ball speed. And you just go, what in the world is that?
Well, speed is a skill. I think just as much as like leg putting is or hitting a good flop shot, like you have to build that skill over time.
Yeah.
And it just takes reps. And like I've been trying to chase speed for 2 years now, like consistently most winters I'll spend a bunch of time doing it. And like it is something different that you have to work on. Like the sessions that I think really push me forward are like an hour and a half. Like it's 20 minutes in the gym warming up. It's hitting 50 to 70 balls as hard as I can. It's like a
50 to 70 as hard as you can.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I've always hit my fastest ball speeds after ball 40. Typically.
I believe that.
So like most people say like, oh yeah, I've tried to gain speed and whatnot. But then you ask like, how many balls have you hit in a session? And most people say like, oh, it's like 10 to 15. Like what I've seen, I've when talking to long drive pros and those guys, they're hitting tons of golf balls in these speed training sessions. And so like, I don't think you're really doing the work that you need to until it's like ball 40. Like granted, your body can handle it, right? Like, I'm not a medical doctor. Please consult your physician. But that is where I've seen the most gain, like hard work, like just hard work and doing that consistently over a period of time.
An actual workout.
You can see gains. Yeah.
Yeah. God, what was I just going to say? I just had a really good question that this is going to have to come back. Oh, I was going to say, this would not be a Member Guest podcast if we didn't talk about equipment.
Yeah.
You have an interesting bag.
Yes.
A very interesting bag. Yeah. And you've also seen, like, I know you've talked to all the equipment folks yep. and interesting bag.
Yep.
Please walk through it.
Boy, lots of interesting things going on there. I've had single length irons for a period of time.
Yeah.
Like I've done all the stuff.
Over You've
the
done years. Everything. Yeah. I get it. Trust me. I get it. Yeah. And we're broomstick guys. Yeah.
That was awesome to see. You never run into a broomstick guy.
A lot more people are going to broomstick. So I've definitely great. Seen a little bit more recently.
It's good to see. So driver Ping G440 LST TPT shaft. I have spent a lot of time with John Sinclair down in Dallas, one of the top coaches, in the world. And he works a lot with TPT. He's super smart when it comes to optimizing like performance with clubs. And so,
might need to go see him.
He's unbelievable. Like John is so great. And so, yeah, driver, three wood hybrid, kind of set up all the Ping G440 stuff with TPT shafts in them. The concept there is, can we get more flex with less torque? So they have really low torque, so low twisting, but you can get that way. You can get more flex, so you can get a bit more out of them. So
makes sense.
I have learned, I've been playing a TPT shaft in the driver for probably like 7 years now. So quite a while a lot of flex.
Yeah.
So like I'm used to that. Like I'm not used to like something that's X flex or sure. more. Like my driver shaft is probably stiff. Like if
yeah, you're it's not it an regular, X or
no, yeah. not at all. So I just love that's just worked really well and it's just optimized very nicely at this point. So it goes really high. It spins
well, it's
low.
Also 10 and a half degrees. It's not like it's a nine or like I play an 8 degree driver.
Okay.
You hit high. It's fun to watch. So you can go high and go 330. It's pretty sweet.
That one's good. And then, Adele, I've worked with Adele forever. So I've got Adele SMS Pros. And then Adele wedges, which you saw me getting to experiment with new wedges. Weird bounce, learning all about bounce today.
Yeah. I've been going through that. When I saw that, I was like, yes, this guy's like going through what I'm going through. Cause I'm trying to get ready for like tournaments coming up. Yeah. I think you're going to play in the Mid-Am as well, right? Yep. The Minnesota Mid-Am playing in that got club championship, trying to make a team for the Mac Cup this year.
Nice.
Playing in the Spooner up at Northland. So like all my majors are like all my tournaments are coming up. So I've been messing around with bounces. And like when I saw you doing it too, like around seven, I'm like, this is, I totally get what's going on here.
Yeah, I just have to give a little warning. Like, hey, I do have 21 clubs in my bag right now. I just want to let you know that.
Yeah. We're tinkering, getting ready for tournament season.
It's totally fine.
Yeah. And would you all explain what you're working on and what you settled on? Cause I feel like we both kind of found some stuff today around the greens, which maybe is going to propel us well into the September season.
So I had got a set of the new Adele SMS Pro wedges, and with low bounce, a different bounce than what I had in my old ones. I had quite a bit of bounce in the old ones.
What's quite a bit, like 12, 10, 14?
Just much, much bounce.
A lot. Okay. We'll just say 12.
I don't think they count. I don't know if they do numbers like that on them, but, and I think around Minnesota, what we learned today was when I was taking massive beaver pelts and like just wasn't going well with low bounce on these. Yeah,
it was probably, if I had to guess, 4 degrees of bounce, maybe six.
Yeah.
It was pretty low.
So then I went back to the old wedges and all the shots started coming off better on my full swing. And so it's always that thing. I always wonder about clubs like this of like whether I need to adapt to the club or you need to get the club for you. Like, do I just need, if I spent the next 2 weeks just hitting that 60 degree, I'd probably change like some of my low point and like how I'm hitting those shots.
Yeah.
And I think I'd adapt to it, but do I want to do that? Well, right now I don't. Cause we've got tournaments coming up here shortly, but, that was really fun to see. So our ground in Minnesota soft, and bounce is good.
Yeah. I went, all Titleist. So the reason I did this is because I was trying to find consistency. So I went back to my Titleist irons and played them a couple weeks now, and they go really well into the Titleist wedges. And so like, if you were to pull up the Titleist wedge spec sheet, right? Mm-hmm. I think their lowest wedge they make, like they actually make a pitching wedge. So a 44 degree, just, wedge.
Yep.
And I think that's a 10 F grind.
Okay.
And then if you just keep going up 4 degrees, it goes 10F, 12F, 14F.
Okay.
And so that's what I did is I just have, I have my pitching wedge and then it goes to, which is 44 degrees and 48, 10 F, 52, 12 F, 56, 16, no, 14 F, something like that.
Yep.
So it's just super consistent all the way through. And then my highest lofted is my highest bounce wedge.
Got it.
And it's just like the way that it should flow.
How long would it take you to adjust the different bounce?
Well, you could argue, I mean, depending, did you watch me chip on three or did you watch me chip on 12?
that might've been like a technique thing you're working on.
Yeah. It didn't take very long because I've used high bounce wedges before and it felt like I was going back home.
Got it.
Where like for most of the season this year, like when I was digging, chunking, I was trying to make a low bounce wedge work and I can't make it work. Yeah. Like, but a lot of the really good players I know, they all have like low bounce, open up the face and like, I'm like, oh, I should be able to do that. And you know, over the past like week or so, I'd say now I've just gone back to what I used to play. It just, I'm chipping it better, but it's not hard to chip better from really bad. So, I'd say it's just trending. Yeah. I'd say trending in the right direction. I mean, other than like one really bad shot today, the rest were pretty good.
You figured it out. A little bit of work, a little bit of on course practice.
Knock on wood. Yeah.
Never hurt.
Yeah. A little on course, standing a little closer to it. Wasn't it? It was wild. I did that with you today because, McCain, who I play a decent amount of golf with, we were doing a bunker lesson. He's like, all right, I'm going to stand here and show you how I stand. And I want you to do this. And it felt like my legs were like this far apart. He's like, that's how wide you need to get.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, I'm going to start doing that. Like when I'm talking with people and I had you stand where I stood and you're like, dude, how do you chip from here? Like, and then you bladed it across the green. I'm like, okay, that's what I do when I stand like that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. That's great. That's great. I think like another lesson that I've learned over the years is like how important feedback is. And like, that was a good little feedback moment that you created of like figuring out how far you stood. Using video, I think is super important of like looking yourself on the golf course. Where am I aimed? How are my shoulders? How are my feet? Where's the club pointed? But not enough people do it. And same with like, we were talking about wedges a lot of like, you were talking about wanting to work on your wedges. Like if you're not using a launch monitor and like starting to feel ball speed and like feel those distances and get feedback of how far it's going like straight away, then it's not great practice, honestly. So it's like constantly searching out feedback on what you're doing helps you get better so much faster than just hitting balls or
got
just
a video
like
your swing.
So the video swing, I think a caveat to that is not to like less so to critique your golf swing, more so to look at maybe your pre-shot routine, look at where are my feet aimed, where's the club, more of like fundamental stuff rather than like, I wish I had this change in my swing.
Yeah, you learn a lot. I usually, what I always see in those is aim. And obviously the camera angle has to be right too. Like you kind of have to be right behind camera in line with, I think like the hands.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting when you look behind, you're like, oh my gosh, that's where you're aimed and you're trying to hit it here. Like no wonder your path is.
Yeah.
7 degrees out to in, like you're trying to hit it back left and you're aimed 20 yards right.
And the thing you constantly hear too from coaches is like posture and setup and like, just look at yourself when you set up, like, do you look slouched over? Do you look athletic? Like you could hit the ball 350 yards in that setup. Like, how do you look as well? Cause most of us think you feel like you're like, oh man, this is like, I look great in the setup position. You look at it and you're like, oh, like I'm kind of hunched over and like maybe my butt's sticking out really far. And like, what's happening
here? I was playing with a guy the other day. He's got a very interesting swing. He's like, I don't even like to look at my swing on video because it's so ugly. Yeah. And like, I know it's ugly, but like he's a scratch golfer. And he's like, I'm okay with being a scratch golfer. And I don't want to do it because I know when I look at it, I'm going to be,
the secret is that every golfer hates looking at their golf swing. Even pros hate looking at their golf swing because everyone just sees everything wrong with it. Like as soon as you,
even the guys that are really good, like, I don't like my golf swing. It's ugly. It looks really weird.
I'm right there.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to need the stack wedge deal. I'm actually going to let you plug it. I'm going to plug it. You had it on the range. It costs 250. So we were talking about wedges today for context. I need context. I'm just like talking to you. Like we're just hanging out. We were working on wedges and like ball speed and distances. And you know, that's a big part is like, obviously, as you get better, a lot of scoring comes from just wedge play. Mm-hmm. Like that's where your scoring is. And you had like a little, it's the stack system. Yeah. It's like $250 and it's basically a launch monitor the size of basically an iPhone.
Phone. Yeah,
it's like a phone. So it fits in your golf bag. It's right behind, and then it just gives you your ball speed and yardage on your wedges. I mean, it can do every club, but you use it mainly for wedges. It can do every
club. Yeah, but the thing with wedges is, okay, before everyone goes like, oh, there's no way this can be accurate, I need, you know, something actually accurate.
Yeah, I need a TrackMan.
First of all, you're not practicing with any feedback, so it sucks anyway. So it's going to be better than that, like doing with nothing. Secondly, so Sasha McKenzie, great guy, came up with the stack, and like he's a golfer, and so he's trying to figure out how to use this stuff. And so he had this launch monitor to track the speed training. And then he came up with all these wedge games and combines, and it just makes it fun. The thing that has gotten me out there actually practicing and making sure I get it done, I'm chronically bad at like actually getting stuff done, but they do this like seasonal circuit. So it's 8 weeks long and you have to go, it's a different thing each week you have to do. So you have to go out each week, and then there's like a prize at the end for the person that finishes best over the whole season. So it motivates you to go practice, and then you just start to learn about like how to hit these shots. Cause most of us don't put in enough reps. We just simply don't hit enough distance wedges with feedback.
Pro golfers do it every day for hours.
They do it every day for hours. Yeah. That was like a Claude Harmon quote. Was DJ, just like, and most people have heard it at this point, but like when he got good, he just hit wedges on TrackMan and just to different yardages all the time. Right. Like that was, that was what propelled him. And it's doing stuff a lot is very useful. So, if you don't have any routine or any feedback when you go practice distances, wedges, you're probably not going to get any better.
All right. So I need to get one of those. That's just what I'm going to grind for the next.
Yeah. So stack weeks. Just the launch monitor. There's a discount code. Of GSL.
Yeah, tell everybody this comes from. Is it just Golf Wall?
It's GSL. It's GSL. Still an old Golf Science Lab. Still an old discount code. It's.
I saw you know it's good. If you're still using the old one, it's a good discount code.
Yeah, it's $290. That'll get it to $260. But honestly, it's also about stuff that you actually have with you. I don't know if you're. I have a garage. It's my family room, honestly, that looks like this as well.
Yeah.
And stuff that stays here and doesn't get out to the driving range or get out to the golf course also is usually not beneficial. So it's about finding things that like fit in the bag you can carry with you.
I couldn't believe when you pulled it out, it's literally the size of an iPhone. I can't, my Hawk, that thing's not going anywhere.
No, we're not going to.
It's staying in here.
Back to the range.
Yeah. That's for sure. Well, thanks for coming on, man. Yeah. Welcome to the pod. You get to see it's where great. All the magic is made. Glad we finally got to play and I'll see you at, is it Brookview and Minneapolis Golf Club this year?
Something like that. Yes.
I think that's what it is for the
Minnesota Mid-Am.
Minnesota Mid-Am.
That's where we'll see you next.
Yeah. See you there, man. Thank you. Thanks.